You're listening to My Mother is a Robot, a Magic Bean podcast. Episode 6, Panda Propaganda. Scattered about the thinning brown shag carpet of the family room are the brighter and more exciting colors of the paradise. Pencils of blue, orange, and red for the copious amount of flowers that cover the land. Multiple shades of green for the grasses, pink for the blossoms on branches, and new trees that will grow in place of where the churches once stood. And as many other colors for all the animals I will play with. Now that we all get along. In Isaiah, it says, "There will be peace between humans and animals. Little children will have nothing to fear." I love drawing pictures of the paradise, filling a blank sheet of white paper with the most beautiful scenes of the not too far away future. I'm not a particularly talented artist at age 8, but it makes me feel better, like I'm doing something productive by thinking about it. The Bible tells us to meditate on all things good. So lots of times I meditate on which of the animals will be my new best friends. Giraffes, lions, parrots, little baby goats. Mandrills, peacocks, horses, meerkats,
kimono dragons,
piglets,
wallabies,
octopuses,
dolphins,
penguins,
kangaroos,
rabbits, and pandas. The depictions of paradise on Earth frequent the Awake and Watchtower magazines, publications printed by the organization to help me preach the good news of the kingdom door to door. The books of our family library abound in illustrations of the coming reign of Jesus Christ in the paradise on earth. These books are all printed by the Watchtower Bible and Tract Society, and we usually receive them whenever we and thousands of other Jehovah's Witnesses get together for assembly. We study them at home, at our weekly meetings, and refer to them in the preaching work. The reason for the publications, the reason for the meetings, the reason for the preaching work, the most important work of all, is to survive Armageddon and get to the paradise. This good news of the kingdom will be preached in all the inhabited earth for a witness to all the nations. And then we play with the pandas. My father's name's Frank, but he calls himself Sam. He's an unbeliever. When I'm not at meetings, preparing for meetings, going door to door, or preaching in my personal territory at school, I'm meant to be doing my best to win over my father at home. I'm meant to do this, as they say at the meetings, without a word. My father's not only an unbeliever, he's an atheist, and has a very short attention span when it comes to conversation about Jehovah. He often makes jokes that are funny, but draw a frown from my mother, Doris M. His idea of giving thanks for our food goes like this. "Three potatoes for four of us. Thank God there's no more of us." Or, "The king has come, the bread is gone, so pass around the flapjacks." His enthusiasm makes my brother Robert and I struggle to fight back the giggles. Doris M. never protests, only abides his blasphemous humor. Winning my father over without a word means that Doris M. is to remain in subjection to him. And Robert and I are to show him respect and obey him. Our goal is to maintain peace in the household and help him embrace the truth by being zealous in our own worship of Jehovah. This is a guaranteed formula. There's no doubt my father will eventually come around. Someday soon we'll no longer bow our heads in silence at the dinner table. Our father will say a proper mealtime prayer out loud for all of us. I know Frank, who calls himself Sam, will love all the animals too. So I'll lead by example. I'll keep being a good witness. I'll continue to serve Jehovah with my whole heart. Then he'll see. Then he'll change. To be clear, the book of Matthew, chapter 24, verse 14, doesn't reward those who do the preaching work with pandas. But early on, a purposeful snare had been laid to catch my young imagination. Regurgitating the imagery of the paradise to myself and others always came with a wince of pain I had to intentionally brush aside. The beautiful colors, smiling faces of the illustrations were almost always juxtaposed with fire from the sky, crumbling buildings, and horrified men and women, the evildoers, running for their lives. There was never a moment of my life I didn't know that the one had to come before the other. This good news of the kingdom will be preached in all the inhabited earth for a witness to all the nations. And then the end will come. Like other doomsday cults, Jehovah's Witnesses have been professing the end of the world since the organization's first publications in 1876. Since that time, each Jehovah's Witness has been charged with the obligation of the preaching work, risking their place in the paradise if they decline to do so, having the blood of the unbelievers on their hands. Aside from not entering the paradise after Armageddon, you could be disfellowshipped from the congregation beforehand, shunned by other witnesses, even family members, for not participating in preaching the good news. Most of my older siblings are disfellowshipped. They didn't want to be Jehovah's messengers. So, out of love, we shun them. Because if love is still shown to them while they are wicked, what reason would they have to change their evil ways and come back to Jehovah? Emotional fucking blackmail. This bit of doctrine impacted our family immensely, and my father disagreed with it. But he could not force Doris M. to speak with her other children. He hated it, but did nothing. It seemed as though he was never going to change his attitude towards Jehovah. But I'd continue to hear stories about how unbelievers were miraculously changing their minds, testimonials accompanied by an outpouring of gratitude that one of Jehovah's loyal servants had turned them around with their exemplary actions. The publications from the organization were full of such stories. Just because it hadn't happened yet didn't mean that it couldn't. So, I kept on trying. There was still time for him to change. Tonight, at the Kingdom Hall of Jehovah's Witnesses, the main talk is given by Brother Labadee. Like Brother Labadee much. He doesn't tell funny stories like Brother McCall or have a nice voice like Brother Young. I also heard that his wife is kind of mean to kids, but that's all gossip, and I shouldn't even repeat that, not even in my head. He begins by describing the role of a shepherd. I know what a shepherd is. They take care of the sheep by making sure they all stay together and the little ones don't go wandering off. I entertain the idea of becoming a shepherd in the paradise, walking the grassy green hills with my company of bleeding fluffy friends, my long white robes flowing in the breeze. We'd come upon a little footbridge crossing a stream where I'd usher them over single file, and on the other side we'd take a rest in the shade of a beautiful blossoming fruit tree. I'm not sure if women are allowed to be shepherds, though. I'll have to ask one of the elders to know for sure. Doris M. clears her throat and taps the unopened Bible in my lap. Abandoning the fruit tree and the shepherd's robes, I return to my uncomfortable chair and itchy, ruffled dress of the here and now. Brother Labadee has asked us to open our Bibles and turn to Matthew chapter 25. I open mine precisely to the book of Matthew, 3/4 of the way through. I flip a few pages and land on chapter 25. When the Son of Man comes, that's Jesus, you know. When the Son of Man comes in all his glory and all the angels with him, he will sit on his glorious throne. All the nations will be gathered before him, and he will separate the people one from the other as a shepherd separates the sheep from the goats. He will put the sheep on his right and the goats on his left. I like goats, especially the little baby ones. But in this case, they are meant to represent something else. It's an illustration, you see. The goats, we are warned, are to be damned because they are not on Jehovah's side. This is where it gets into things I don't like to think about. But Jehovah will be a fair judge. Plus, we wouldn't want any bad people in the paradise. Then Brother Labadee poses a question to the congregation. We've all made dinner reservations, yes? He pauses long enough to receive the appropriate amount of nods and affirmative smiles from the audience. Satisfied that everyone is on the same page, he continues the illustration. Imagine there is only one table left at a very popular restaurant on a very busy night. Two prospective diners call to request a table. The first individual is rude, demanding, and raises his voice to the owner of the establishment. The other is friendly, understanding, and considerate with his request. Who do you think the restaurateur would rather invite into his house? It was the actions of the two patrons before they arrived at the restaurant that mattered, and only one of them was granted entry. By this we see, brothers and sisters, we are being judged on our actions now. So make no mistake, for these are the last days. Your words and your deeds now will decide if you are to enter into the kingdom of Jehovah. By the time the Son of Man comes in all his glory, it will be too late to build that good rapport. His words pull my ever-wandering attention into tunnel vision, and everything slows down. All us witnesses know that we are living in the last days, and that Armageddon is right around the corner. I know time is running out, but if the sorting has already started, that doesn't leave enough time for my father to change. He can't be judged for his actions now. He still gets revved up about Brian Mulroney and the Conservative Party. He swears. He watches R-rated movies. He's nowhere close to dedicating his life to Jehovah. He doesn't even believe Jehovah is real. The interior of the Kingdom Hall speeds back up. My stomach tightens. I feel sick. Satan the devil will attack Jehovah's people, which will start the Battle of Armageddon. Trials and tribulations will be set upon us to test our faith. But Jehovah will intervene with forces natural and supernatural to dispense with those who oppose us. He will pull the walls of their own buildings down upon them. In fact, the earth will open up and swallow them whole. The birds will feed on their bodies. I know I meant to pay attention, but I can't look at him. His words are too ugly. I stare at my Bible. Instead, I take as much time as I can when directed to find all the verses in Luke, 1 Thessalonians, Revelations. A physical test to focus on while I try to bat the horrible imagery from my mind. Father, screaming, his body burning, alive, covered in rubble, crushed to death. Tonight we are too close to the front of the hall for me to see the clock. It's purposely positioned on the back wall so the speakers can keep track of their time on stage. Turning around in my chair to see how close we are to the end would be unacceptable. I just want to go home. I try to hold on to thoughts of the paradise, but the absence of my father being there with me makes it a dull and dreary place. Mercifully, Brother Labadie's conclusion has finally arrived. So be mindful of your actions. Do not be like one of the goats, for as Matthew chapter 25 concludes, these will depart into everlasting cutting off, but the righteous ones into everlasting life. The congregation applauds, as usual. I applaud too. But it feels so awfully wrong. I pick at a run in the same thinning shag carpet that begins in our family room and continues up the staircase to where I sit in troubled contemplation. I meant to be in bed after the meeting, but instead I'm watching my father, who is eating popcorn and watching the television. How is it possible to feel this love for someone who Jehovah hates so much? I don't want my dad to die. I don't want his body to become bird food. Even now he's watching a very violent movie. I should run downstairs, switch it off, and beg him to listen. Tell him, if Jehovah reads your heart right now, he'll know for sure you're one of the goats. Please come with me to the paradise. But I don't. I go to bed with a heavy heart. To some, this is a hard story to hear. To others, it rings all too familiar. Am I saying that I and the other former members of my faith are the only ones who have suffered? No. Is the horrible trauma associated with the teachings of Armageddon any different from those of eternal hellfire? Maybe. But have too many of us been shaped at an early age to hold to a faith based in fear? Most definitely. And it's a cruel thing to do to a child. It was very complicated, maintaining the joy of the paradise and the fear of Armageddon congruently. Cognitive dissonance is defined by holding competing ideas in one's mind. Carrying around this collection of misinformation as a child was painful and traumatic. I desperately wanted my father to survive Armageddon. I wanted ours to be the smiling faces, like those in the pictures, playing with the pandas. It's taken a lot of time, but I'm not scared anymore. Because there is no carrot. There is no stick. I have freedom without fear. And freedom. Freedom is my paradise.
Thank you for listening to My Mother is a Robot. Magic Bean would like to thank Lloyd Evans, Cyrilyn Rousseau, Tony Teofio with Papatone Pictures, Benjamin Masterpolito at benpm.github.io, satunamen.com, and freesound.org.